Hello and welcome back. The pairings are up for round six. My opponent this round is a man who has recently emerged from beyond the wall. He's not a White Walker, though he could very well be. He is one of the most charismatic people ever to pick up a microphone, the former podcast host of Limited Resources and all-around superior guy to Brian Wong. It's John Laux.
Hello, and you're going down 2-0, baby.
Probably. let's not go with that. So first question, nice and easy one to start you off. Why are you so dreamy?
Oh, man. I don't know. I was raised as a, you know, little Montana boy, and that's just how they raised us. I had a lot of animals growing up. I don't know. I'm just cuddly. Marshall says I have a body built of cotton candy.
Well, he would know all about cotton candy.
Yes, and my body.
Okay, fine. How much magic does get played in Montana, though?
Some, but it's a very, I don't know, at least when I was there, and I was there years and years ago, it was pretty tight, like the community of people that kind of knew what they were doing, I guess. Like, there was a state tournament where seven of us stayed at this guy's house the night before. It was in Bozeman, I believe. And the next day was states, and six of us made top eight. And it was just like, we were just that crew. We were so cool. And the guy who, like, got second at that state was already two-time state champion. So it was just, yeah, tight community.
That's got to be a little inbred in terms of play skill development, though, right?
Yeah, and deck selection. The next state tournament, I was at a friend's house the night before. This is in Montana. And I wrote my deck list out on a whiteboard the night before states, just brainstorming. And it was some red-white control deck or whatever with Searing Meditation and whatever that angel that gains you one life every turn. Fireman Angel. And so I told my friend, I was like, can I borrow these cards from you? And Jared, my friend's like, yeah, sure. I'll show up tomorrow and you can borrow them. And then he shows up tomorrow and he's like, I can't actually loan you those cards because now I'm going to play that deck. And so I ended up not being able to play all the cards I wanted, but I got enough of them. And then we got paired in round one and then he beats me and then he goes on to top eight states and I didn't. But, I'm not bitter.
No, not at all. It doesn't sound like it. So it's no secret, and I mean, I'm sure this is something you're going to be asked infinitely in the next few weeks, but you've recently left Wizards, and we're going to get to that in a bit. But probably a good idea to start with how you actually got through the door. So was Wizards always your dream job?
For a long time, yeah. Like, when I started playing Magic and started learning more about Magic, and mostly when I started reading articles on their website, it was like, wow, that would be a really awesome job, but not in a way that felt ever serious. Kind of like how I'm like, yeah, it would be an awesome job to direct movies, but it doesn't actually seem like something that could seriously happen. But then as I got deeper and deeper into Magic and started actually doing game design in college, it became more and more of a possibility. And then when I did the Great Designer Search 2, I felt like, oh, I can actually do this, and like I have the skills, and the competition kind of helped reinforce that. I didn't win, but it really certainly like helps them notice me and helps me notice that, yeah, I think I can actually do this stuff.
So was that the way you got on the Wizards radar, through the GDS?
Through that and other things. Like, I knew a lot of people that went there. I just, you know, went to college in Seattle, so I knew some of the people going in there, like the Max McCall and Gavin Verhey people. Like, I went to college with them. And I had just kind of been around. I had done a couple interviews that didn't really go particularly well, but, I mean, they knew who I was. And so the Great Designer Search certainly, like, brought me even more forward as a possibility, but the way I got in was through Ryan Spain on the digital team because of the work I had done on digital games. So I eventually got onto paper card stuff, but that was not like the route that I went in on.
Jeez, you and Gavin and Max McCall at the same college. Like, if there had ever been a collegiate Magic circuit,
yes,
that would have been a pretty sweet team.
Yeah, and I shared an apartment building with Gavin and Max's girlfriends at the time, and so like, it was weird to also see them around, but then like they would just come play test at my apartment and then go hang out with them, and it was kind of cool.
So the GDS, you mentioned that you didn't win.
Yes.
Does that still hurt? Like, are you still getting daggered by that?
Yeah, it used to hurt. It hurts a lot less having actually like then gone to Wizards and worked. And
sure.
Honestly, like, I got to be on a like full-fledged design team for the Seth's codenamed Locke, which was fitting for Laux. and I was working with Sean Main specifically, who got second in the Great Designer Search 2 and came up, and Scott Van Essen was on that team, who got third in the Great Designer Search 2. And so, and then I'd worked with Ethan on stuff, and working with those guys specifically reinforced that, like, wow, those guys really know what they're doing. And I was with those guys, and they tell me that it looks like I know what I'm doing. So it was just kind of all reaffirming and just like, okay, I'm not crazy. These guys were actually really good and, like, deserved, like, beating me, actually. So it all helped. And honestly, those guys, like, became good friends. So I was happy for that.
When you were actually going through it, was it more enjoyable than stressful, or was it just too much pressure to enjoy yourself?
Oh God, it was so stressful. Like, so it was weird. When the competition started, I had just graduated from college. And so I was trying to get into Microsoft, which, I had a connection to a Microsoft internship, or not internship, contract in Vancouver, Canada. And so, like, I got the contract, but it took me multiple months to actually get across the Canadian border. Eventually they let me in. But, the point is, like, I was working in Canada, and I just wanted to be back in Seattle. And so, the Great Designer Search 2 was, like, my actual plan for, what my next job would be and how I would get back to Seattle. So, like, I was really committed. It was just like, this was a full job interview that I really want to get. And luckily something else worked out, but that was my goal when I started. So it was super stressful.
Yeah, I can imagine. I mean, you had people helping you with the design part towards the end, though, right? Like, there was the whole forum thing going on?
Yeah, it was weird. Everybody had to use the wiki, and that was just a massive headache. The wiki was really hard to use and hard to manage, and you were forced to get cards off the wiki to put in your set. And so you spend as much time designing as you do wrangling helpers on the wiki.
Yeah.
And what was also weird for me was, I went, like, when I started the Great Designer Search 2 and sent in my first 10-card submission, I was basically unemployed. Like, I wasn't doing anything with my day. I was just waiting to get into Canada. So I just put my whole day into it. And then, like, when the first round started was also when my job started in Canada. So I had moved away from my friends, and I had started a new job. And so I just didn't have as much time to put into it and just didn't have friends to talk things over with as much. And so the quality certainly suffered.
So what was the favorite card you think you came up with during the search?
Yeah, I looked back at my old cards, and hilariously, there were two that I made that ended up getting printed. One was something like the single R instant creatures you control get +1/+0 until end of turn from Avacyn Restored. Not the most complicated card, but that was in my set. And also, the hilarious one was I made 2R vanilla 2/3. And when I submitted it, people were like, oh my God, is Laux crazy? Red doesn't get 3-mana 2/3 vanillas. That's insane. And then Wizards has since printed it, and no one really batted an eyelash. So those are my two favorite ones, hilariously. I look back at the individual designs, and I liked some of the stuff I was doing with colorless only mana, but none of them really stood out as like, oh, that's a really solid design. It was more of, I mean, because we designed a lot of commons too, it was just the simple stuff that really stood out to me. Like, oh yeah, that was a good, clean, simple design. I should have done more of that.
Yeah, Banners Raised was the name of that one.
Yeah,
that
Banners Raised.
I only know that because one of my local players got absolutely blown out by it in the top 8 draft of a Grand Prix trial. He's been known as Banners Raised ever since.
Nice.
All right, so you're in the door and probably excited like hell. Where did you actually start, and what did it involve?
So I started as a digital game designer on Magic Online. And my primary task was, to make the set spec. So, the set spec is the document that gets handed off between, the design team and the, programming team that codes the cards. So every set has one of these documents, and it gives the programming team everything they need to know about the set and tries to answer all their questions, up front. And this was, something that Ryan Spain, who was on the previous co-host of Limited Resources, the podcast I was on, Ryan Spain used to do this, but just didn't have time to do this and manage the kind of grander vision of Magic Online stuff. Right. And so I took over more of the set-by-set stuff, whereas he got to focus more on the grander Magic Online stuff. And so the process started pretty, like, the document itself at the beginning was pretty, I don't know what the word is I'm looking for. It's just, there wasn't a ton of information in it, but eventually I fleshed it out a lot more and got in, and I looped in a lot of other people like, James Sui doing our UI. Eventually we got Allison Medwin, who was doing, editing, got some of the programmers more involved, and the document kind of, flourished and became, bigger than it was before. So that was mostly what I did on the team.
So basically you were involved in the handoff between the designers and MTGO. I guess that was right before the beta testers got a hold of it.
It was, I mean, yeah, just before they started coding the cards. I wasn't actually super involved in the beta test process. That was, like, by that point, I had already moved on to the next set, so.
Oh, okay. Working so many years ahead, I guess.
Yeah, yeah. It's super weird. Like, yeah, our schedule was a mess just because we had four core sets plus, like, countless number of other things, like dual decks and event decks that were all overlapping each other. It's pretty crazy once you're in the building.
I could, well, I mean, it's pretty crazy outside with everything bombarding you, so I can only imagine what it's like inside with two release schedules to be looking at.
Yeah.
So, okay, so you're working on that. Did you have much to do with the actual end product of Magic Online, though?
So the stuff I had most to do with were new features for the dual scene, where you actually play Magic, in order to support some new mechanics in sets. So I wrote an article on the Daily MTG, Journey of a Thousand Nyxes, and it talked about the improvements made with Journey to Nyx. That was kind of the crowning achievement of my ability to impact Magic Online. I did other design stuff, like I was involved with designing fixes to features and designing new features to support the beta, and we were really trying to, like, what's the best thing we can do before we turn V3 off to make the beta as good as it can be, and so I was involved with those talks, but not a lot of what I did there, I guess, saw the light of day.
Sure, okay. And then you transitioned to duels, right? Duels of the Planeswalkers?
Yes, that was after about 9 months at Wizards. I don't know if you want that story.
Sure.
So, as I said, not a lot of what I did on Magic Online saw the light of day, at least on the grander Magic Online thing, and it made me frustrated, and I understand why it happened. Like, a lot of it was our focus on stability and performance, because we really needed to make sure the thing ran fast enough and wasn't crashing, which they don't really need a designer for a lot. And so I just found myself getting really frustrated on the team. I was also going through some tough personal stuff. So I was just, I don't know, getting too frustrated being on Magic Online. And so my boss, Ken Troop, moved me over to Duels, thinking that it was going to be a place where I'd be happier. It's a little more consistent and faster paced. So that was the idea. But
okay.
It didn't end up working out.
No, well, clearly. So, I mean, the obvious question then, and I'm sure this is something else you're going to be asked a lot, is why leave?
Yeah, I tried to make Duels work, but I just kind of knew that it probably wasn't going to work out. It just really wasn't where my heart was. I'm super invested in Magic Online and just really wanted to make Magic Online as good as it could be. And so once I was on Duels, like, I hadn't really played much Duels. There wasn't a ton for me to do, but I honestly wasn't really looking for a lot to do. And so I just kind of put out some feelers into the industry, into people I know, just being like, hey, I would leave Wizards if the right job popped up. And eventually the right one did, so it was right for me to leave Wizards at the time. It was hard, because, I don't know, I made a lot of friends there, and I actually really liked going to work, but it just wasn't making me happy.
The turnaround there between wanting to work there for so long and then getting there and it not making you happy is obviously huge. And I mean, I'm sure you can't get into specifics, but was there any incident that sort of started the turnaround, or was it just a general accumulation?
I mean, the incident that made me start looking actively was the move to Duels, but yeah, I think it was just kind of like watching features that I felt like were really important keep getting pushed off, like the stuff that came out with Journey into Nyx, was a lot of it was stuff I was asking for with Theros. That kind of bummed me out. There were a couple times where, like, I would ask for things that I needed to do my job and just kind of be told no, or be told they weren't important. And it was, there were, I can't really name the specifics, but there were like two specific things. I was like, I need this to do better. And I worked to get those things for, I guess, the 9 months I was on the team, and just never got them. And it just kind of really made my job harder and just made me way less invested.
Yeah. So another high profile leaver of Wizards was Jerry Thompson, who left a couple of months before you did.
Yeah.
And one of the things he said was that he found it difficult transitioning from being one of the smartest people in the room to being no smarter than anyone else that was there.
That's certainly a part of starting at Wizards. Like, starting any other job, I kind of go in not knowing anybody, and there's this early period of getting to know everybody, and everyone's kind of getting to know you and your skill set, and you're figuring out where you fit. Whereas when you go into Wizards, like, you know everybody you're working with, you know they're really good, and it's clear very early on that, like, they know what they're doing, and you're playing catch-up so quickly, like, day one, just trying to, like, get your feet wet. Like, I did some FFL playtesting, and it was hard. Like, my record was horrible in the FFL, and it just, it was like, I mean, people weren't mean about it. Like, they were very much like, yeah, you just got to get used to it, and you'll get to know the cards, and, like, you'll get better. But it was tough, so I certainly see how that could be a challenge.
I mean, you're sitting around a table with a bunch of Pro Tour Top 8 competitors. It's never going to be an easy draft, right?
Yeah, and part of that is you just get worse. Like, you're not playing anymore, and so you're actually just, like, a month into the Wizards job, you're worse at Magic than you were before.
I remember Aaron Forsyth posted a picture of a draft table with, like, Jerry T and Mike Turian and Sam Studdard, and everybody there was just a ridiculous player.
Yeah.
I said to him, who's the fish? And he goes, me.
Exactly.
I mean, just, yeah, so I can only imagine. What is, like, if you look on the, I think the website's called Glass Ceiling. It might be Glass Door. I forget now. But there's a lot of people on there who have left Wizards and don't have very complimentary things to say about the environment in there. I'm not asking you to badmouth the company. You've been very clear that Wizards wants to give people the stuff they're asking for, but for some reason they can't.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that's coming from higher up? Does it make it harder to work there? What is it that you think makes it such a difficult place to be comfortable?
I think part of it, and I've spoken to this a little bit before, is that Wizards, I mean, it's kind of an old company, especially in the game industry, and they've created a lot of their structure to serve the continual release of Magic sets, like in the paper world. And that's kind of how a lot of their structure was created. Also, I don't know much about, like, the D&D side of things and Kaijudo and Duel Masters. Like, that area is kind of a mystery to me, but I see a lot of these processes built up, around paper Magic and how the creative team and the design and development team work together, and then how those things go to editing, and then how those get moved on to actual, like, layout of the cards and graphics, and then the printing, and, like, that whole process is very, I think, a lot of what Wizards is structured around, and unfortunately that process doesn't facilitate the creation of a living, like, digital platform. It's just, like, not as well suited for that. So when I read those things on Glassdoor, they seem very, I don't know, unhappy and bitter, but just not at all understanding. And when I was at Wizards, my goal was to really change things, so I had to try to understand why they were the way they were. And so I wasn't, I mean, I was upset at times, but I guess I tried to be understanding and work towards a better process. So I don't know, it's hard. Like, on Glassdoor, you've got people that left for reasons, and so of course they're going to be unhappy, but I think you get that at any company. But yeah, every company has its own struggles. Wizards had its struggles. I don't know.
Of course. Yeah, there's no such thing as the perfect employer, right? We know that.
Yeah.
So do you think it's fair to say that the biggest issue, especially with Magic Online, is that Wizards is a paper company trying to make a digital game as well?
I think that's kind of the source of some issues, but I don't know. I feel like, I mean, they've been making digital games for a long time now, longer than most digital game companies have probably existed. So I still view them fully as a digital company. It's just, I think their processes are slow to change. I feel like, look, I left hopeful. Mostly I left because it wasn't moving as fast as I wanted to move, but I still left very hopeful that things were moving in a good direction. So, like, I'm probably about to, like, invest on Magic Online cards and start playing Standard or something, because I believe in Magic Online still, and I think it's still going to be around, and it's going to become a better product. It just wasn't going to do that at the speed I wanted, and I wasn't going to have the impact that I wanted to be happy, so that's why I left.
Sure. Okay. While you were there, you mentioned that you were on a design team for Lock, which is next October's block?
I think so. It actually might be even farther than that. I got so lost inside. I think it's not this fall set. It's not the next fall set. I think it's the next one.
Jeez.
Yeah.
So have you designed anything that has seen print?
Almost. There's a card that I designed with Dan Emmons that is going to be in Commander 2014.
Okay.
But I don't think that's out yet, is it?
No, it, that's not the one with True Name Nemesis, is it? That was 2013.
Yeah.
I don't think so.
And hopefully it's been announced. I believe it's been announced.
Well, we know we get one every year, so you're not ruining anything.
So there is one card in there, and I can't wait to have it see print so I can actually point at it. But everything else I was involved in, I was involved in two advanced design teams, which start even before the actual design team, and then this lock design team. So all of that work I did was probably like way too early to actually see print in the end. But it'll be really interesting for me to see lock come out like, what, 3 years from now, and be able to point at like, oh, that kind of resembles maybe something that I touched, or maybe there's just going to be none of that in there. I have no idea.
Okay. Well, God, it's just so weird working so far in the future. It's got to be hard.
Yeah, it's especially weird because there's this weird black hole in the middle where when I joined Wizards, like Theros Block was done and locked up, and we were on the next thing, but I had never played Theros in the paper world, so it's just this giant black hole. Like, I really don't know Theros very well.
So one thing you do know well, though, is Magic Online in general.
Mm-hmm.
How do you feel about the version 4, the new client that has been released to the public?
I was always under the impression that, in general, it's better than V3, but there are specific ways in which it's worse, and those ways are bad. I think that those areas where V4 is worse than V3 are getting addressed, and so things will get better. But for now, some of it's still kind of a headache. Like, I went to go trade the other day and definitely ran into some trade bugs that I wish weren't there. so, like, I don't know. I was never fully involved with the decision to turn off V3. Like, I was low enough in the design team, and that's a pretty high-level decision. That's, like, worth-level stuff. So I didn't actually have much impact on that stuff. Me personally, I wish that we could have waited to turn off V3 longer. And gotten more features. I was always hoping that we could get leagues in and entice people to come over to the beta to play leagues and then turn off V3, but it wasn't in the cards.
Which is a real shame, because leagues were my favorite part of Magic Online. It's what got me into Magic Online, actually, back when V2 was still a thing.
Well, they're coming back.
Eventually, yeah, because I had Worth on last time. And he mentioned that to me, that they were coming back probably this fall.
Yeah. I should also say that I never felt like scrapping the beta and just sticking with V3 was ever really an option. Like, V3 was on its last legs.
Yeah, that was another thing that Worth mentioned, is that you can't fix the problems with V3 now. It's not really fixable.
Yeah.
Whereas V4 is just, you can plug and play, basically, which is obviously better. It's just hurry up and do the plugging so we can play.
Yeah, like, V4 was slower than I would have liked it to be, but V3 would just be, like, nothing. Nothing would change for years.
Yeah, exactly. So when are you coming back to competitive Magic?
Oh, boy. My plan is to kind of dip my toe in over this next year while I'm fairly restricted and just see if I like it, and then within, like, a year, I'll be fully unleashed and can go back into it full steam. I have to see what my new job's like. I start that in just a couple days. And if I have the time, my plan is to like play an FNM every week and probably play some Constructed Online, maybe do some streaming, and just make sure I still like it before I get too involved. But I was hanging out at the Seattle Center last weekend or last Friday, and they were setting up for the Dota 2 International Tournament thing.
Yeah.
Massive thing. And what was funny was the energy outside was the same. Like, there weren't that many people around. It was Friday, and the thing started on, like, Saturday or whatever. Maybe it was even Thursday. So there weren't that many people around, but you could tell the gamers that were there for that. And just, like, the energy just felt like the same energy outside of, like, a Pro Tour or something, and just really made me want to go compete. So I think the fire might be coming back. We'll see.
So awesome. What restrictions are on you? Because you mentioned that you're restricted for a little while.
Yeah, there's a 30-day probation after leaving Wizards. So that's still on right now. And that's from all... I can play Magic Online all I want, but this is for a sanctioned paper play. Casual paper play is fine. Like, if I want to go play in a EDH tournament or something, the casual stuff's fine. But so 30 days right now, and then there's 32 days technically after every... set release, I can't play. So every set release that I worked on, in basically in FFL, but basically the sets that I had full knowledge of. And so that's up through, let's see, M16. So, yeah, a year from now. Other than that, I can play in the in-between time, but I can't play in the pre-releases, and it means I can't play in the Pro Tours because those fall in those 32-day probation periods.
So you can't even play an FNM in that probation period?
Nope.
Ooh, that seems a little harsh. I mean, Grand Prix PTQs I get.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it's FNM.
Yeah, it's a little rough. I mean, I had always hoped that – I feel like there's a way that Wizards can let even their own employees play an FNM, but it's a tough issue.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Randy Buehler is one of those that's famously affected by this. He'd love to come back and play Pro Magic, but he doesn't even work there anymore, and he still can't.
Yeah, exactly. Poor Randy.
So I'm sure you must have some funny stories from Wizards that don't involve confidential information. Is there one you want to share?
Oh, boy. I mean, Eric Lauer is just hilarious. And I think he knows he's hilarious, but sometimes it's hard to tell. He's just, I don't know, the conversations he has, and he's got this weird theory that he read about evolution where, oh God, where it was humans resulted from pigs mating with bonobos. Probably more the other way around, bonobos mating with pigs. But like, those are the conversations you have with Eric Lauer over lunch. And you leave wondering, did he convince me of this? Like, you're never quite sure.
Is he still the Mad Genius? Because that was his nickname for a long time, right?
I mean, probably. He's like very clearly one of the smartest people in the pit, and it shows. So he's just like the super powerful tool that Wizards can point at problems, and he's good at finding the right answer. So, like, I think Modern Masters 1 was lead developed by him, and I think he just killed it. So it's pretty cool to see.
How loud is Mark Rosewater?
He is pretty loud. Mark Rosewater is a powerful personality. He is loud. There was a meeting where Kelly Digg said to Mark in the meeting, "Mark, can you please stop yelling?" And Mark yelled at him, "No." I mean, his response was, "No, sorry, it's hard. I just get loud when I get excited." And like, he apologized for it, but the interaction between the two of them was kind of hilarious. Like, he knows himself. I should also say, like, I've read a lot of Mark Rosewater's articles, and I had met him at Wizards and worked near him for a while, but it wasn't until, like, I actually sat in a design meeting for Locke, and he was, like, doing the kickoff thing and explaining what the block was about and what we would be doing. That's when, like, he seemed most in his element. Like, he was so dialed in and excited, and it's just, like, awesome to see that he's been doing this for so long, but then he's in, like, just another block kickoff meeting, and he's super excited and ready to go and, like, really has a vision for what the set's going to be. And that was just really cool to see.
Yeah, and I mean, I think that's probably one of the stories behind Magic's success, is that you have people like him with that energy level, even after 15, 18, 20 years, whatever he's been working on the game, which is just phenomenal.
Yeah, the whole pit is full of just awesome personalities. Like, I got to know a lot of the developers that I didn't really know before, but I actually just love them all. Like, Sam Stoddard, Adam Prozek, Ben Hayes was just like this mysterious person that became really awesome. Ian Duke, the Dukes, yeah, they're just all great. I can't say enough good things about the development team.
I mean, you can't be related to Reed Duke and not be a nice guy. I don't think that's possible.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, actually, one of my questions later is about Reed Duke. We'll get to that.
Okay.
What are the chances that you form a playtest team with Zach Hill and Jerry Thompson?
Hard with Zach Hill not being in Seattle, but I don't know. I haven't actually talked to Jerry since he left. We started talking in Wizards. It was weird because he's one of those people that was always kind of my idol, and now he's working next to me at Wizards, and I think he kind of knew it too. I don't know. We had fun with it. But yeah, I hope to see Jerry around. I think he's still in Seattle. Is that right?
Yeah, yeah. He is. He said he was staying in Seattle.
But
yeah.
I'm on, like, super vacation right now between jobs and just, like, letting myself relax, so I haven't really pushed for that yet.
So some easier questions now. M15 is just out, and I know you're allowed to talk about it because it's out. Is Nissa World Waker the lousiest card, or is it Wall of Mulch?
Which one? Explain to me what Nissa does, just so I know I'm not talking about some old version or whatever.
You're going to make me look this up now.
I know, because I have to be really careful that I don't accidentally spoil things. Like, I think when Born of the Gods came out, I was talking to some friends about it and accidentally referenced a card that was in Journey into Nyx, because I thought it was in Born of the Gods, and it's just like, oh god, I have to be super careful with this.
Alright, it's not in one site. Let me see if it's in the other site. Ah, here we go. Right. Okay. So, 3GG, 3 loyalty, plus 1 target land you control becomes a plus 4/4 elemental creature with trample, plus 1 untap up to 4 target forests, minus 7, search your library for any number of basic lands, put them onto the battlefield, they become 4/4 creatures with trample.
Oh god, that card, I don't know, it's going to kill you. I don't know, it terrifies me. That card is a monster. So I would not describe it as the Lauxiest, more like it's going to kill the Laux all the time.
But Wall of Mulch, it blocks and it draws you cards.
Wall of Mulch, now that's a card. Oh man, yeah. I'm in. Walls that draw cards?
My Wall of Blossom is one of my all-time favorites, so I can't go wrong with a Wall of Mulch. Yeah,
putting a Splinter Twin on a Wall of Omens is about the Lauxiest thing you can do, and I've certainly done it.
Unless it gets Threads of Disloyalty, which happens to the Pro Tour.
What? Oh, that's... how dare they? That's so mean, whoever that person is.
The blowouts were epic.
Yeah.
You love Backdraft, right?
Oh, I love Backdraft. I'm probably... I don't know if I've drafted more Backdraft than anyone else in the world, but I've certainly spent a lot of time thinking about it. I once wrote a strategy article on how to Backdraft.
So how highly do you pick Backdraft in Backdraft?
Which one is Backdraft?
It's from Legends. Oh, do you need to know anymore?
It's probably a really high pick. I'm looking it up.
It's 1R for an instant, does half the damage rounded down, done by one sorcery this turn.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that one's really bad. That's a first pick in Backdraft.
I think it's pretty much, it should be named, the format should be named after it. The card is terrible.
Yeah, exactly.
Wow. Okay, awesome. I just wanted to throw that in.
Thanks. I'm going to make a Backdraft cube. And so I don't think this will actually make the cut, though, because I'm trying not to have any card that is always a first pick or always a last pick. And this one is always a first pick.
Yeah, telling me. The art, look at what the hell is that chest plate doing, my god.
Wow, someone backdrafted that chest plate for him.
Jeez. So one of the things that you were beloved for before going behind the wall was the content creation. I mean, obviously limited resources. You were great on that. And you wrote great articles. Any chance you're going back to this?
Like I said, with the competitive stuff, I'm going to dip my toe in. And then if I like that, I'll probably get deeper into content creation. I put an article about leaving Wizards on the blog, and that felt good. And then I posted a little thing about design. Like, I'm going to try to write about just generic design when I can. And then I've been talking to Marshall, and if competitive Magic and those things go well, then maybe there's something we're going to work out with something, but we've got plenty of time to figure that out, so.
I mean, if you're looking for a co-host, I know a guy.
Okay. Well, I'll keep that in mind. I'm hopeful. That's what I'll say.
Good plan. And streaming? Can you do some streaming,
yes,
please?
I really want to do streaming. There were a couple times where I almost started during this vacation period, but I just was like, it's too soon. Like, especially because I would have to stream with the new client, and I'm afraid that whenever I look at something or find a bug, I would just explode. So it's like, I need a little bit more time away from Magic, and then I'm going to try to do some streaming. I love streaming. It's like hanging out with my friends, so I'm sure I'll go back to streaming.
Awesome. Yeah, I can't wait to see that, especially when Cube is up. Your Cube drafting strategy is similar to mine. You would love my Cube, by the way.
Yeah, awesome. I went back and watched an old video of me streaming Cube with Marshall, like, over Christmas once, and he was dialed into my stream, and I, like, got enthralled in my own stream, because I was like, I don't remember what happened, but I'm really excited, and this is going to be cool, and it made me want to stream again.
Awesome. Well, whatever it takes, man, we'll be here behind you watching you.
Thanks.
So you've got a new company that you're working for on a new project. What can you tell us about it?
So it's the company's called Dropforge. They are funded by Wargaming, which is the company that does World of Tanks. And so that company was like, hey, we want to get into mobile games. Let's start up a mobile studio. And so they're funding us. And I haven't started there yet, but as far as I can tell, they're fairly hands-off. And so if people have played Card Hunter, which is a browser-based like tactics and card game, our first project as Dropforge is to port that to tablet. So a lot of what I'm going to be doing in my first 6 months there is really digging into the design of Card Hunter, and I think we're doing some like minor design shifts and stuff. And so that's what I'll really be getting my hands dirty in. And then there's, it sounds like there's some other mystery projects in the future that we're going to be doing. But yeah, I haven't been like fully briefed on those yet. So I'm excited. I really wanted to work at a company that's smaller. I'm going to be number 13, employee number 13. And okay. I also like the smaller scope of the games, and I like the mobile, like, I like trading card games, and I like the mobile kind of, platform. So I think it's going to be a good fit.
So I want to talk a little bit about your time on Limited Resources, because Marshall got the reputation after you left for being like the kingmaker. You basically, you work with Marshall, you go to Wizards.
Yeah.
How did that come about, and how did the relationship between you two develop?
So let's see. I had wanted to do podcasting when I was writing articles. I was like, hey, this podcasting thing sounds pretty cool, but I hadn't really seriously thought about it much. Zame and I did like a pilot episode. And, Zame Bagg, if you, anyone knows Zame Bagg, he's around. And, it, like, was okay, but I don't know, didn't entirely click. And we kind of dropped it, and then I went off and to Canada and did my job there. And then when I came back from Canada, I got a job at Amazon, in Seattle. I, was on my way back, and Zame noticed that I was coming back and noticed that Marshall needed a new co-host because Ryan had left. And so Zame Bagg was like, hey, Marshall, hey, John, you guys are both really cool. You should talk to each other and then maybe do this podcast thing. And so I said, sure, that sounds great. And I listened to a couple Limited Resources episodes, and then I was scheduled to be on for a podcast, and then I slept through it because I just like moved to Seattle and was exhausted. And then Marshall did it alone for that episode, and then he forgave me and let me on for the next episode, which I showed up for, and then the rest is history.
Yeah, because you really brought Limited Resources to a different level. Like, Ryan was excellent, but when you started, it's almost like the show took on a different sort of tone, because you're a lot more relaxed and comedic than Ryan is.
Yeah, Ryan and Marshall set this awesome base of, like, the goals for the show and the structure of the show. It was just, like, no BS, and we're going to make you better at Magic, and it was just, like, a really good structure for something that just wasn't out there yet in the podcast sphere. And so that was really important. And then I guess, yeah, I came in and I think I brought more, I guess, goofiness and fun to it. And also a part of it was Marshall had become a lot better since the show started, and he was kind of the serious player, whereas I brought a little bit more like goofiness and willingness to try unorthodox things and just kind of a love for certain different cards than Marshall. And I think that helped create more discussions that way. And then since I've left, Brian Wong has come on, and he brings a lot of the same goofiness and fun to it, but he's also just the best Magic player that's ever been on the show. Like, I guess LSV's been on the show, but I don't know. Brian Wong's insane at Magic, and surprisingly, he's good at telling people how to be good at Magic. That's what I was worried about when he started the show, because he's a fairly intuitive player, but he's been really good, and he understands the goals of the show really well, so he's good at conveying how he does what he does at Magic and helping people learn. So I've been really happy with the show since I left. Like, I was really worried that Marshall wouldn't be able to replace me, as egotistical as that sounds, but he did, and so I was really happy for him.
I think one of the things that's unique about that show is how each new host has changed the show significantly without reducing the quality.
Yeah, it's great, and the numbers for the show just kept going up and up, so it's fun to watch.
Yeah. I mean, it helps having the exposure on the mothership and, you know, on the coverage stream and everything like that, of course. But it also helps just being the best quality information being put out there week after week after week.
Yeah, I am honored to be a part of it, or at least it's history.
Well, I mean, you know, I think you were the heyday. I think you were the golden age, to be honest. And I'm not just saying that because you're on my show right now.
Thanks.
Okay, so let's move into these five quickfire questions I have here for
okay.
you. They're supposed to be quickfire.
All right.
Anyway. Are you a five drop or a zombie?
I'm a five drop.
You're not a six drop do nothing?
I mean, five drop is closest to a six mana do nothing. Basically, I'm expensive and inevitable. Which is kind of like zombies, though. I'm both. A five-drop zombie. Expensive and inevitable. There we go.
Uh-oh. Okay. That's blown my metric completely out of the water. Just how fat is Marshall?
Oh, my God. he's so fat, it's indescribable. God, I wish I had a fat joke ready, but I've kind of used them all.
I mean, I heard a rumor that he has to put his belt on with a boomerang.
Oh, snap. The problem is his own gravity warps the path of the boomerang. So.
Oh, jeez. Okay. So rumor disproved. Excellent.
Yes.
A young Mr. B. Wong from Washington wants to know who taught you everything you know except the things you know that are wrong.
Wow. Well, young B. Wong, it was Brian Wong. I mean, like, I learned a lot, and then I moved in with Brian Wong, and then my learning, like, doubled. Just, like, being able to constantly pick his brain. And we went on runs together, and I would, like, just, like, be out of breath and just be like, okay, so Rise of the Eldrazi, surreal memoir, do you first pick it? And, like, we had a lot of discussions like that.
Awesome. Where do you stand on the great Necrobyte controversy of 2014?
I like the card. Is that an option? I don't know. It seems like people love it or hate it, right?
Well, Marshall hates it and Brian loves it. So you need to choose. Pick one.
I am on Brian's side, which is a safe side to be on. I love it. Although I honestly didn't originally love it, but I've grown to love it.
Every single time I don't play around it, I get blown out by it. They always have it.
They always have it. Yeah, Necrobyte. The last time I actually played against a Necrobyte was probably Abyssin Restored, so it's been a while.
I guess it doesn't get played much in the future League, huh?
Spoiler alert!
Alright, is your hair better than Reed Duke's?
Most certainly, it's pink.
Right now it is.
Sure. What does that mean? Are we going to have a hair off one of these days? Do I need to prepare?
I mean, I have been known to do stupid things to my hair, but pink is... I've never done pink because I'd have to go blonde first, and that's just way too difficult.
Sure. I kept trying to, like, slyly invite myself over to the Duke family Thanksgiving dinner. I'm trying to work my way into the Duke family. We'll see.
Those lunch table discussions have got to be something, right?
Yeah. Like, I wonder if the Duke parents are, like... I don't know, like an anthropologist and a scientist, like Indiana Jones or something. It's like Arnold's parents from Hey Arnold. They're like off on adventures or something. I don't know why I have this fantasy about the Duke family so often. Don't tell them.
Oh, I'm pretty sure they know. I'm pretty sure. Yeah. I'm just wondering if they break out into fights over who's going to take the last chicken nugget. Yeah. Like, no,
I can't imagine them fighting. Oh, like you take it. Yeah, I see. Yes.
So sweet. All right. Well, that is basically all I have here. So thank you so much for taking some time out of your busy afternoon doing relaxing things.
I took a nap. Thank you for having me on.
Anytime. And like I said, if you want to get into podcasting and you need a guy to do the editing and stuff, I know someone. That's all I'm saying.
All right. It's good to have a connection. Good to have a resource. Thank you.
Any chance you're going to be in any GPs, like maybe GP Orlando? Oh, no, that's within 30 days of a set release.
Yeah, the GPs are going to be tough definitely for the next 2 or 3 months just because I'm still settling into a job. But I want to travel to Grand Prix, so I hope it works out.
Okay, Portland might just be too soon, right? Like,
yeah, Portland's too soon. I'm going to miss Portland, unfortunately.
Well, I'm sure I'll get to something that you're at some point.
Yep.
All right, well, that brings us to the end of the round. I've been thoroughly stomped by the Luxosaurus himself. But I would like to thank everybody for joining us, and we'll be back next time for round 7.
A ring-a-ding-ding-ding-ding! Uh-oh! You know what that sound means! It's time for the John Laux Trivia Round! Congratulations to our next contestant, Chris! Come on down!
Oh my god, oh my god, oh my god, I'm so excited!
Hey Chris, so where are you from, what do you do, and what is your favorite thing about John Laux?
I am from Mount Pearl, Newfoundland. I work for the Canadian government, and my favorite thing about John Laux is he's so dreamy.
All right, Chris, let's get started. I'm going to ask you a series of 5 multiple-choice questions all about John Laux. You will have 1 lifeline in which I'll phone a friend for you, Marshall, Brian, or my mom. You can also ask me questions, and I'll probably not answer them. All right, Chris, do you understand the rules?
I'm ready to go.
All right, so you ready for round 1? Here we go. For nothing, this is question number 1. Which city was John Laux born in? A, Missoula, Montana. B, Boise, Idaho. C, somewhere in the Dakotas, as far as science can tell. Or D, Spokane, Washington.
Oh, I'm going to go with A.
False! It was not Missoula, Montana. In fact, John Laux was born in Spokane, Washington.
Ah.
Little known fact, John Laux was born prematurely, so he was flown out of Montana to Spokane, Washington. A bit of a trick question there.
Oh, I don't know about that one. That's dodgy.
All right. What was little John Laux's favorite construction toy? Was it A, Legos, B, an Erector set, C, Kinects, or D, frozen poop?
I'm pretty sure the answer should be D. I'm gonna go with phone a friend on this one, John.
All right, phone a friend. I'm gonna recommend you call my mom. So I'm dialing the number now, and hopefully you can hear through the speakerphone thing. It's a very tense moment right now as the phone rings.
This is actually happening.
This is actually happening. This might be the first time ever my mom's on the air with me. Hello, Mom. How's it going?
It's going good. How are you doing?
I'm good. Okay, Mom, here's the question. What was my favorite construction toy? Was it Legos, an Erector set, Kinects, or frozen poop?
Legos.
All right, she says Legos. Thank you, Mom. I love you.
Is that all you need?
That's all I need.
Alright, bye.
Bye. I don't know if that was at all legible, but she said Legos. Do you trust her?
I'm gonna trust in Mrs. Laux and go with Legos.
All right, you are correct, and so is she. It was definitely Legos. I'm glad she didn't say frozen poop. All right, question number three, again for nothing. In which speech, debate, and drama event did John Laux place fifth in the Montana State Championships, probably sometime around 2005? Was it A, debate, B, the one with all the crying, C, extemporaneous speaking, or D, humorous duo?
How are these options? I'm going to go with A because it makes sense.
False! John Laux actually competed in an event called Humorous Duo, in which he and his friend Kevin wrote a 12-minute humorous skit and performed it and got fifth at state.
Oh my God.
It was an event in Montana, and it was really funny. All right, question number four, still for nothing. What was the maximum rank John Laux achieved on his high school tennis team? Was it A, 19th, B, last place, C, most well-liked person on the team by everybody, or D, he may as well not have played tennis because it's stupid anyway, so what's the point?
I think I know the answer, but I'm going to go with ask John a question.
Okay.
How do you feel about tennis, John?
It's kind of stupid.
I'm going to go with D.
It's actually a trick question. They were all correct. I was 19th on the team, which was also last place, but I was the most liked person on the team by everybody, but I may as well not have played because tennis is stupid anyway, so what's the point? All right, final question. Are you ready?
I am ready.
All right, for nothing. What was the name of John Laux's technically first girlfriend, even though they never really went on a date and she dumped him to focus on school right now? Was it A, Destiny, B, Angel, C, Hope, or D, Crippling Regret?
I'm going to go with Hope, because I hope so.
Correct, it was Hope.
Oh my God.
And little known fact, the weekend after she dumped me, I went to the, I think it was the Fifth Dawn pre-release, where the card Lose Hope was printed, and my friends mercilessly made fun of me.
Oh my God.
All right. Congratulations, Chris. You got a score of, God, what'd you get? One? Two?
Three?
Oh, you got three. I'll count one of them. You got some of them. Okay. Congratulations. You win this lovely sign-off. Thanks for listening, everybody. Good night and good Laux.
Oh, my God. All right. Brian Wong got nothing on you, man.
Good.
I believe when the walls stop turning. I believe when the storm is through. I believe I heard them say.